You're listening to the weekly teaching podcast of South Hills Church in Corona, California. We hope that what you hear today inspires you to laugh, question, think, and grow. If you'd like to connect with us even further, hit us up online at southhills.org/corona. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy this week's episode.
And the title of my message today is Couch Fit. Couch Fit. Not quite CrossFit, it's Couch Fit. A little bit different. My family, we have this kind of weird quirk, this thing that we like to do together, and it's a little bit odd. Now, I will admit, we love every year watching the CrossFit Games, which are happening right now. Okay, so they started this past week. How many of you are into CrossFit? Okay, you're proud of it. I've never people that are love CrossFit. I've never heard you so quiet. It's weird. Usually they're very loud, and we love watching the games. We love watching like these people who are competing to be the fittest on earth, who do these things that are just superhuman, like so many different tests of like strength and stamina throughout these different days. And my kids, like, they know the names of the different athletes from year to year, and we like track it on the app on our phone. And so this past week, towards this weekend, we're laying around and we're watching all this stuff, and my kids were actually, my three kids were out with their grandpa and my sister. They took them to Universal Studios for like their vacation, which ended up being a secret vacation for my wife and I, because we were home just the two of us. And it was a little bit weird because we get done with work and my wife's like, "What do you want to do?" And I'm like, "We can do whatever we want." And so for us, that for a lot of the nights, we were watching the CrossFit Games. Some of you are like, "Okay, you guys don't party quite the way I would, but..." And when I tell people that we watch the CrossFit Games, usually they'll say, like, "I didn't know that you did CrossFit," to which I reply, I don't, actually. I don't do CrossFit. Like, we watch the games, which is different. And in fact, one of these nights this week, we're laying on our couch, and we got a couple couches in our living room. My wife's sprawled out on one. I'm laying on the other. We're in pajamas. We're wearing elastic waistband pants. She's eating a bag of chips. I'm not going to tell you how much of that bag she inhaled during these games. I was eating ice cream. I, at one point, dribbled ice cream on my shirt, so I took off the shirt. I'm shirtless, eating ice cream, dribbling the ice cream on my belly. And as we're watching the fittest people on earth do incredible things we would never be able to do, of course, we were critiquing them and criticizing them. Because they weren't quite doing it right. We're like, "Man, I really expected more from him. That, are you serious? You're coming at me with that form right there? That's what you think is going to win the games? You know what? I can't believe he didn't push a little bit harder. Even though this is the sixth event, and I would have literally died halfway through the first one and not even finished, right?" And we're just like, we're mocking these things, and we're like giving our critique, and "I would have done this, and like, you know what you really could have done on the rope climbs? Is that I can't even climb half a rope, okay?" And we're like giving all this stuff. And halfway through, as we're like eating stuff, my wife is trying to tell me something with her mouth full about one of the CrossFit people that she was convinced was going to drop out of the competition. And as she was saying, I was like, "Okay, two things." I was like, "One, I didn't fully understand you, because you need to swallow before you tell me you got a lot of Doritos going on over there. And secondly, is this wrong? It feels like it might be a little bit wrong. Like, I don't know. There's something that seems odd with it." And for all of you that are like, you know, want to judge my wife and I for just like, "You're just laying around watching other people exercise," that's basically what the Olympics are too, okay? You're not a figure skater, okay? You can't throw a javelin. You can't do all these things. But we love to watch, and we love to eat while we watch, and we love to criticize the people who are doing things that we can't do, that we're afraid to do, that we've never tried to do, because clearly we're the experts, right? As we're halfway through, you know, whatever Ben and Jerry's flavor we happen to be attacking at the moment. And all of this really leads me into talking about one of the seven sins that we're going to attack today, and it's the sin of sloth. And, you know, when you hear that word, I think this is a very misunderstood one of the sins. You probably think of one of a few different things, probably one of these three things, right? You think of this guy from the Goonies, right? How many of you, when you think of sloth, you like Goonies all the way, right? You think of like Baby Ruth being yelled, right? Like, that's what you think, right? Some of you, you're in a different stage of life, and so you think it's Zootopia, right? That you've seen it a million times with your kids, and or you're just the creepy 50-year-old who just goes by themselves to watch Disney films, and everyone's like, do you have a kid? And you're like, why do I need a kid to be a part of this cartoon for the fifth time? And this is what you think of, right? Or maybe you think of, you know, what we would call like Saturday sloth, right? Just laying around in a stained t-shirt, eating nachos and pizza, watching stuff in your beard. If you're a guy or a lady with a beard, I don't want to judge, okay? Whatever you're doing. I wonder if you've found yourself in that place before where you had high ambitions for Saturday. You're like, we're going to get so much done. We're going to clean out the garage. We're going to detail our own cars, okay? For once and for all, we're actually going to do laundry. We're going to fold it this time. I know, it's going to be crazy. We're going to fold it and put it away instead of just like going on top of our bed that we slept with the laundry as a blanket. And we're just like, what's clean? I'm trying to figure it out. I need this shirt, you know? Like, we're going to do it. And then you got to the end of the day and you're like, we literally did none of those things. We did nothing. We just laid on the couch. Because in our culture, when we think of the idea of sloth, that's probably most typically what we think about. We think about the idea of laziness. We think of sloppiness. We think of someone who is a slob, who is just binge-watching Netflix and just powering through pints of ice cream solo, no one else around, and doing nothing. We think of that. And if that's what comes to your mind, you would actually be mostly wrong. What is it? I probably should have thought about that before I told you that's not what it is. No, I do have a definition. Before I give it to you, I want to just kind of explain why we've gotten off track with what we think this means. Our tendency to think of sloth as laziness or inactivity actually has more to do with the Industrial Revolution than it does with the New Testament teachings of Jesus. Because in our capitalistic society, career has long ago replaced religion as our source of meaning and identity. Like in our culture, we measure someone's worth in terms of productivity, efficiency, and maximizing perceived potential. And I say perceived because we may not actually have that potential, but we want to believe that we do, right? To be able to do this thing or become this thing. And, you know, although there's like some shreds of truth and nobility to that, what a lot of times, as that being our highest value, what it ends up producing is just emotionally detached workaholism, which is not a virtue, right? It's not godly, right? That is not the goal for us. That's not what God has in mind. And in fact, workaholism is just another side of sloth. And I know maybe you've never entertained that thought before. You're like, I don't struggle with sloth. I work all the time, 80 hours a week. And in fact, our church forefathers would say, you are just as slothful as those who really sit around and do nothing. Same vice, opposite direction. So maybe this has piqued your interest. Like, what does this thing mean then? Let me give you a definition to put us all on the same page. Sloth is avoiding the monotony of meaningful work, because it's too hard, too boring, takes too much time, and the immediate rewards are much too small. Some of you are like, uh-oh. In other words, the heart of sloth isn't laziness, it's avoidance. It's refusal to take full responsibility for your story, reacting to dissatisfaction that you may experience with disengagement and distraction. Like if something in your life isn't working the way that you want it to, the slothful impulse is either to do nothing, which is what we typically think about, or to do everything but the thing you really should be doing. That's slothful. Sometimes it looks like inactivity, and sometimes it looks like overactivity in any other direction than your primary goals and values. The slothful may actually have an idea or a vision of the kind of person they want to be, but they resist the painful process of personal growth required to get there. They see responsibility and routine as annoying, boring, and oppressive. And so instead of disciplining themselves to evolve and transform, they cope by mentally and emotionally checking out. The Desert Fathers, this grouping of monks who kind of gave us these categories of these seven deadly sins, which they took from Scripture, they use this Greek word that we translate to sloth in modern English. And this Greek word essentially means lack of care. Lack of care. It's this picture of apathy and indifference, which is the description that somebody who's truly slothful resists. Because in their minds, they're like, I do care about this very much. Just not enough to personally change to make it better. But I do care. Just not enough to be motivated, you know, to action. Now, to give you a diagnostic, if you're like, man, I'm not sure if this is me. How do you know if this is something that you struggle with? Because, my husband's nudging me a lot right now, and I'm just trying to figure out, is this really me or not? Like, how do I know if this is something? Let me give you a little bit of what this might look like. Just 10 quick things. The first thing that sloth looks like is feeling more connected to characters in a TV show than coworkers or family. Right? You ever get to like the end of a Netflix show and you're like, now what am I going to do at night? Who am I going to hang out with? What am I supposed to do? They were my friends. Like, that was what I looked forward to. That was the connection that I was enjoying, right? And your family's like, you could spend time with them. Not interested. New show, right? And sometimes we feel that connectivity with fake people because we're avoiding the complications of building relationships with real people. That's sloth. Another way in which sloth rears its head is pursuing only what you find fun. And, you know, a lot of what make life work, sometimes those things aren't fun all the time, right? Mastering surfacey small talk, right? It's always like staying up here but never going below the surface to talk about what's really going on with you and your life and getting real with the people around you. It looks like staying busy to avoid introspection, right? Like doing and doing and doing and like, I'm doing so many things, I can't be slothful until somebody asks us the question that we've never considered of like, are you doing things that are actually pushing you in the direction of the kind of person that you want to be? Like, I mean, I don't know, I'm doing things, I'm doing a lot of things, but we don't want to slow down and actually consider where our life is headed. It may look like an inability to sustain interest in anything that's challenging, that's really difficult. It looks like sometimes unreliability, or you're like, I'll be there, and people are like, we'll see. I'm not sure about that. Letting others make decisions for you, because, you know, I don't know if I really want to take a stand and say, this is what I would like, this is what I want, this is where I'd like to go and be and do, and so we just let others take the wheel of our lives for us. It might look like lethargy, apathy, daydreaming constantly to disengage, ducking uncomfortable responsibilities, or maybe even going through the motion for weeks, maybe even months at a time, where you've gotten to a place where maybe you're physically engaged, but not mentally and emotionally. You're just doing stuff, but you're not consciously connected to it. Because sloth's big temptations are escapism, okay? Which says, what else can I do that's not this? You ever been there? I should do this. I'm going to do this. And as soon as you sit down, you're 3 minutes in. You're like, this is boring. This is going to take forever. I'm never going to get there. What else can I do that's not this? And the other temptation of the sloth is fatalism. Like, it's never going to get any better anyway. Like, why really exude all this effort? It's not really going to improve, right? It's going to take forever, and what if I put all this work in, and I put myself out there, and then it doesn't go where I want it to go? Then I'll feel like it's what. So you know what? I'm just going to disengage and disconnect. When change gets challenging, the slothful look to distract themselves with something more comfortable or immediately comforting. The slothful only want to do what they like, are good at, and will be immediately celebrated for. Because anything else feels like it's probably just not going to be worth the effort. They want to believe that what they want out of life will magically someday come to them without any uncomfortable self-work of their own. And if it doesn't come to them, the thought is, well, I guess it just wasn't meant to be. Which essentially means that the slothful find themselves stuck between a life that isn't working and a life they don't want to work for. And in their mind, what am I going to do? It's not my fault, okay? It's other people, right? It's lack of opportunity. It's unfair circumstances stacked against me. There is nothing I can do, except for a bunch of things I don't really want to do. But like, other than that, there's nothing I can really do. And so I guess I'm just going to keep unhappily, you know, trucking along, doing the things that I'm doing that really aren't working, going through the motions, hoping and praying for a miracle. There's so many scriptures that talk about this idea, and one of the ones I want to begin with is just in the book of Proverbs. It's this ancient Old Testament book of wisdom that's just collected over the years and compiled together, and some of this stuff is so profound. And I want to read you what one of these wisdom authors says about kind of this vice of sloth. Proverbs chapter 6, verse 6, he says this: "Take a lesson from the ants, you lazy bones." Okay, back off, Proverbs. "Learn from their ways and become wise." Now, I know some of you are thinking like, wait, I thought you said sloth wasn't laziness. It is and isn't. Sloth isn't as much about a lack of action as it is about a lack of wisdom. Right? A refusal to look at every area of your life, be honest about where it's headed if you don't address it, and then diligently work to remedy that. And that's what this writer means when he goes on to say in verse 5 of the same chapter, or verse 9 of the same chapter, he says, "How long will you sleep? When will you wake up? When are you going to wake up to the things that you're living in denial of?" Verse 10, "A little extra sleep, little folding of the hands to rest, and then poverty will pounce on you like a bandit." A little aggressive. "Scarcity will attack you like an armed robber." I love the writers of the Proverbs are like, "We're going to coax you in." You're like, "That doesn't sound too bad." "Pounce on you." And you're like, "Okay, wow." And it's trying to shake you awake. That's the purpose of this poetic phrasing. And really what this author is trying to tell us is that, like, you're pretending that that thing is not a problem. Not because it isn't a problem, but because you don't want to deal with it. But it's going to catch up to you. You can choose to either deal with it now, or life will force you to deal with it later. Because it will pounce. It will attack. Now, for some of us, you know, the thing we don't want to deal with, it really is about work, right? It's the fact that we're in a job that we hate, that doesn't speak to who we are, that it doesn't make us feel alive, doesn't make us feel like we're contributing anything good to the world, but we're too afraid to go pursue our dream. Or maybe we don't want to just muscle through the early years of training and apprenticeship in order to get where we want to go. Maybe for us, it's an issue of not preparing for our financial future. And maybe these are things for you. But for others of us, it doesn't have anything to do with the work and the money side of our life. The thing for us that is like where we struggle with sloth, where we've kind of fallen asleep, for us, it's our marriage. Because we've been going through the motions for a really long time. And it's like, we've been married a long time. We hate each other, but we're still married. We're still doing stuff. I mean, like, I don't like her, but like, we've stuck it out. We've stuck it out, and nobody's killed anybody, and so I feel like that is a win, right? And yet we don't want to go below the surface and talk about where the dissatisfaction comes from or what we might need to do to improve things. For some of us, it's our connection to our kids. It's like, man, it was a little bit easier when they were younger, but now it's like, hormones, puberty, they've turned into some weird alien, you know? And it's like, I know that, like, I need to be engaged and whatever, but it's just, it's so complicated. I don't feel like I'm good at that. And it's like, I give my best to my kids, and, like, no one is just like, great dad, right? In fact, I'm giving my best. I'm doing the best I know how. And they're like, you're a horrible dad. You're a horrible mom. And you know what? It's way easier just to, like, live in denial of that thing and just to work a little bit extra. Just to stay a little bit later, because you know what? Nobody is excited about or at least they don't seem excited about what I'm doing at home. But like at work, like when I do something, like I get some applause. I like that. For some of us, the thing we're in denial of is our health. We've been to the doctor and they're like, you are not as young as you used to be. You can't buy a whole family taco pack and eat it as a snack anymore. Like, it's just not, it's not working for you, okay? Your blood pressure's a little, like, you really need to get this under control. And you're like, yeah, I got you later. And you go to through Jack in the Box on the way home, right? It's just like, I don't want to have to deal with that, right? I don't want to have to face that because these other things are going great. And so maybe that thing will just, you know, resolve or take, or I'll get to it later. For some of us, it's our stress levels because we just commit to everything. We don't know how to say no. We don't know how to draw a boundary, and we just keep going and going, and we're being depleted and depleted, and the warning lights are going off, but we don't want to acknowledge it, face it, or deal with it. And I just wonder if you were honest with yourself this morning, like what aspect of your life are you sleeping on? What aspect of your life are you in denial of or turning a blind eye to? Where in your life are you being slothful? Because a slothful lack of effort, this is the reason why Scripture talks so much about it. It's trying to wake us up to the fact that it's a symptom of a deeper problem. The fear of engaging the complications of our full identity. Sloth is that voice inside of us that says, this addressing this part of my life would be so painful and so difficult. I don't want to have to deal with that. And so you know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna double down on this stuff over here and just hope that ignoring this doesn't come back to haunt me. And yet, the writers of Proverbs are like, it's gonna pounce. It will eventually attack. The slothful see true transformation as too costly, too risky. They want the security of being loved and accepted and celebrated as they are without the ongoing sacrifice and struggle of bettering themselves in order to love others better. And yet, there is hope. One of the apostles, Peter, is one of Jesus' closest friends and first followers. He writes something I think is incredibly hopeful. He says this in 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 3. He says, by his divine power, God has given us everything we need for living a godly life. And what he's saying is this, when you connect your life to Jesus, all of the power that you don't possess in and of yourself begins to reside within you. God gives you his power in order to be and do and become all that you are called to. And then he says this, Peter says this in verse 5 of the same chapter. He says, in view of all this, in other words, because that's true, because the power of God through Jesus resides within you when you surround your life around your belief in him, make every effort. If you really struggle with sloth, maybe underline those three very annoying words. Make every effort to respond to God's promises. In other words, that dream of who you could be, the vision of what God is calling you to, make every effort to respond to it, not sitting and just waiting for God to do all the work. It's a partnership with him. How do we respond? He says, supplement your faith with a generous provision of moral excellence, and moral excellence with knowledge, and knowledge with self-control, and self-control with patient endurance, and patient endurance with godliness, and godliness with brotherly affection, and brotherly affection with love for everyone. In other words, what he's saying here is you've got to lean into it. You've got to actively partner with God. You can't do it without him, and he won't do it without you. And it will not happen overnight. It is going to be a process. And that process is going to be painful. And that's why the author here uses these really annoying words in this, like self-control, patience, endurance, all of sloth's least favorite concepts. You ever come across stuff in Scripture and you're like, don't need that word, don't need that word. Where's grace? Circle, highlight, star. Feel good about that. And what is this process supposed to be leading us to? He's like, man, knowledge and godliness and self-control and endurance and pushing through and being patient. And what is all this work? What's the end goal? Making a lot of money? Being materialistically successful? Having a bunch of likes? A bunch of follows? No, no. What Peter is saying is that the end game is love. That like the thing to submit yourself to, the thing that everything really should be moving towards in your life is love. In other words, sloth has a lot more to do with being lazy about love than being lazy about work. And a lot of times we want to excuse ourselves saying like, I work a lot, I'm not slothful. Are you getting lazy about love? Because that's actually what the writers of Scripture are calling out. And when he talks about love, he's to all these New Testament writers are talking about both love for self, which looked like self-knowledge, like knowing who you really are, not just who others want you to be. It looks like self-respect, knowing where to draw lines and boundaries and say, like, I will go this far and no farther because I got to take care of my, it's self-care, right? This is what I need to do to make sure I'm in a healthy place and loving myself so that I can love you well. And it also looks like love for others, which is humility, compromise, serving others, leaving a legacy, not using up all of your time, energy, and money on yourself, but leaving something for your community, your church, those who will come after you. You see, the slothful resist the effort of doing day after day whatever it takes to keep their life and relationships strong, living, and healthy because they don't feel like it. And the New Testament writers, they have a word for this. Maturity. Some of you have heard it, maybe. Maturity. And I know your impulse, and before you just go pointing a finger at the closest millennial to you, I just want to tell you something that Paul is trying to make a point about, and Peter and Paul and all these New Testament writers are trying to make a point about, and it's this. Like, we're all selectively immature. We want to point a finger at why other people are immature and why they're not willing to grow up and why they're not willing to face the thing in their life. But what he's really trying to say is this isn't about everybody else. We're all selectively immature, including you. We're all slothful in some way. There's certain things that you just don't want to deal with. And that is a problem if the thing you're avoiding ends up being one of the most important aspects of your life. So why do we do this? Like, why do we resist maturity? Because true transformation is complicated. It's costly. I mean, if you really want to transform something about yourself, if you really want to make every effort, as Peter's saying, like that's going to probably entail restructuring your priorities, compromising some of your existing plans, sacrificing some of your preferences, altering some of your perspectives. And you know what seems way easier? Just not engaging or investing. Just being like, I'm just going to hang out and just see where this thing goes on its own. And it is safer and easier, but it's also more lonely. It's also less fulfilling. I think the other reason why we avoid maturity is that most of us have learned that surfacey distractions work pretty good. I mean, like, they do, right? Like, I mean, at least for a little while. You're just like, I don't really want to deal with this. Like, what? A new season just got dropped? And there's ice cream in the fridge? Yes, please. And you get into that zone, and you're feeling good, and you're able to forget all about it. And it works for a little while, temporarily. But refusing to face our full selves and stretch beyond our selfish desires, that eventually, you know, leads us to a place where those distractions stop working in the way they once did. And they leave us tired and cynical and lonely and numb because you cannot stay distracted forever. Eventually, that thing rears its head and decides it's going to pounce. There's no way around it. Like, becoming the best version of yourself requires hard work. The slothful don't want to do that because they want to just stay the way they are, even though the way they are isn't working. And Jesus attacks this very idea. He famously says that your old self, your old way of thinking and doing things, your old self must die in order for your new, fully realized self to be born. And we like that idea, but in practicality, it's so painful, right? Because the trouble often ends up being the part of us that might need to die might be a part of us that we are enormously attached to. A part that we're like, I find a little bit of comfort and identity in that. If I were to peel that away and detach myself from that crutch, that story that I'm telling myself, this thing that I don't want to deal with, if I detach myself from my distractions, that peeling apart is going to be painful. And I agree with you, but you can do it. At the same time, you cannot withstand the pain of addressing your brokenness if you don't believe you are truly loved. Insecurity is what keeps us in hiding. It's what leaves us in a state of denial, which is why we say every single weekend here, understanding God's unconditional love for you is the key to your transformation. Embracing and accepting that you are loved no matter what. It gives you this ability to tap into the power that God has given you to make an effort because you are not earning love with that effort. You're becoming your true self, the version of you that even when you are not that, God couldn't love you anymore. So what do we do about this? We've said during this series that, you know, all of these vices, the early desert fathers, those monks said that you don't get rid of a vice by uprooting the vice, but by pursuing its counter virtue. And Jesus, in his most famous sermon, the Sermon on the Mount, he gives us a list of virtues that we've nicknamed the Beatitudes in our tradition, and they match up so perfectly with these vices or seven sins. And I want to just read you what Jesus says is what counteracts sloth. It says in Matthew chapter 5, verse 6, it says, God blesses those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be satisfied. And that's helpful. It's less helpful if you don't know what righteousness means. And I would guess that you probably have some sort of definition that maybe was handed to you by whatever religious connectivity you had as an upbringing. But I want to give you a real definition from the New Testament as Jesus means it. Righteousness is what it means to have a clear picture of and consistently pursue who you were holistically made by God to be. That's what it is to be righteous. To have a clear picture of and consistently pursue who you were holistically made by God to be. This is the antidote to sloth, the inverse of avoidance. Because if you hunger and thirst for righteousness, instead of avoiding the aspects of your life that are difficult for you, you push into those things. And God promises that when you do, he will bless that painful forward-moving process. It's Jesus' way of saying, like, don't tap out. Don't live in denial. Like, don't just do what's easy. Don't live lopsidedly, focusing only on like what you're already good at and what you know that you can receive praise for. Like, you are made to fully step into your identity. And that's a process, and it's going to take time, and it's going to be a struggle, and it's not always going to be fun, but God will bless you every step of the way. And even if you never get where you want to go, you will be satisfied because you fully engaged. Because you leaned into what God was telling you was best for you. But that's not most of our tendency. That's not what we tend to do. So how do you do that? The early Desert Fathers, they recommended something that they call stability of place. Stability of place. And what they meant by that was to stay put with a purpose. Resisting the temptation to run away from who you're called to be and what you're called to do by putting yourself around people who will require you to grow. Who love you enough not to let you take the easy way out. It's willingly entering into relationships with people who will make life harder on you so that life will be better for you. Because our tendency is to do the opposite. And this is the reason that we're this way. Like, no matter what you're talking about, whether you're talking about a job or a place or, you know, a friend group, when you enter into something new, we all go through a little bit of a honeymoon period, right? Where everybody is just getting to know each other and it's fun and it's great. And like, we're, you know, we're all kind of, it's a little bit surfacey, but it's, you know, we're kind of showing off our strengths and it's a little bit lovey-dovey. But after a while, what happens is, you know, people start, the more they get to know you, they start to see your weaknesses. They start to get a little bit of a peek at your dark side, at the things that maybe you're not so good at. All the things you successfully hid from them from the start. And for the sake of community, if they actually love you, they're going to call you out on that. And they're going to encourage you to face it because they have enough relationship with you to do so. And then they're going to want you to do something about it. And then they're going to ask if, you know, how you're going to take action. And then they're going to keep asking how you took action. They're going to want proof that you're making progress. And you know what would be way easier than all that nonsense? Find a different group. Right? Like, and a lot of times we spiritualize that pursuit of a different group. Like, you know what? These people, I thought they were about love and grace and compassion. Ain't nobody perfect. It says it on the door. You people are so judgy. After getting to know me in a deep, intimate way over a year and expecting me to maybe grow in areas that are preventing me from realizing who I was made to be. How dare you? And this is why so many people find themselves bouncing from job to job to job, from relationship to relationship to relationship, from church to church to church. Because the slothful are good at justifying their own inactivity because they believe that their issues are everyone else's fault. And so in order to tunnel out, you've got to move from avoidance to acceptance. From avoidance to accountability. We hate that. Is there another way out? Because I don't really want people to know, like, my weaknesses and things I'm not doing good. That's why I've been covering it up and not growing for the last several years. Is there another? No, there's not. Not according to Scripture. And so how do we do that? I want to give you a few helpful tips as we kind of close off our message and just make it very practical to you. If you're like, this is a great idea. I like pursuing that virtue, but how do I do that? Like, give me some steps that I can put into place. The first thing I would suggest is this. Let the right people know everything. Let the right people know everything. Everyone doesn't need to know everything. Everyone shouldn't know everything, right? If you are blasting everything that's going on in every aspect of your life on Facebook and Instagram, you're not keeping it real. You're keeping it real crazy, okay? And it is not good for you, and it's not good for the people around you, okay? Everybody doesn't need to know everything, but a few people do. A few safe people, a few of the right people do. So who are these people? Like, when I say right people, what I mean are people that are safe and kind, people that love you, but are also good at seeing patterns in your life as they get to know you, that are not afraid to confront you, and that have and make time for you. You know, and sometimes, you know, they love us, but they won't confront us. They're kind, but they won't confront. Sometimes they'll confront, but they don't love us and they're not kind. Right? That doesn't work either. Sometimes it's that, you know, they could be all of these things, but they don't really have time for us, you know? And that's just a reality of it. And sometimes that's an excuse that we leverage. We don't want to see that there are right people in our circle. And so we pick a right person outside of our circle to excuse not having to really be real with anyone. Oh man, I don't know. I mean, my favorite author, they're the perfect person to hold me accountable. But they'd never, I go and stand outside their apartment and they won't return my emails and I got to restrain it. It's really weird. And I feel like if they would just take the time for me, I could grow. But since they won't, I guess I can't, right? And by everything, in terms of sharing everything, I mean everything from the Greek meaning everything, okay? Like, give these people an all-access pass to your life. And don't just tell them, show them, live in front of them. This is part of the reason why we believe in growth groups, right? And having growth groups, like, in your home for at least a season. And it's also why nobody wants to do it. Because, like, well, if people come over, then they're really going to see how I live. And they're going to see that the exercise equipment has dust on it. And they're going to see how I really talk to my kids and how I really treat my wife and how I really keep house or don't. I don't know if I like that. Because then they're going to see past all the stuff I'm hiding. Yes, they are. That's the point. Question is, are you ready to come out of hiding? The second thing I would suggest is locate where you want to grow. Locate where you want to grow. And you got to pinpoint something, because for some of you, you're like, where do we start? My wife recently gave me a list. There are 104 things on it. I'm not really sure. I can't do all this. It's overwhelming. And maybe, you know, you're like me and you look at your life and you're like, there's so many things I want to do and be better at. Like, how do I locate? You got to pick somewhere to start and go all in with that thing. You can't do everything at once. But how do you figure out what to pinpoint? And I would say focus on wholeness, not achievement. Focus on wholeness, not achievement. Exit the success mindset and enter a health mindset. Because as Jesus says, you could gain the whole world and lose your soul if you lose touch with who you are, who you were meant to be, the way in which God made you. Like, what would it look like for you to take full responsibility of every aspect of your life, to stop blaming and excusing and take ownership of your own growth one thing at a time? The third thing I would suggest is leverage your schedule to consistently correct what's not working. There are certain things that maybe aren't working in your life. That's the thing that you want to locate and grow in. And the reason why I say leverage your schedule is that it's not about what you want to do or even what you do once in a while, but what you do regularly that makes you you. And I want to tell you something that is going to feel very offensive if there are certain things that you have been living in denial of. You cannot change your life without changing your schedule. You cannot change your life without changing your schedule. And you're like, I don't live by a schedule. Yeah, you do. It's just not written down anywhere. And if there are areas of your life that you're living in denial of, you need to schedule in addressing them. You cannot keep doing the same things the same way, spending your time, energy in the same way, and expect radical change. It's not possible. And the fourth thing I would suggest is lock in and stay the course, even and especially when you don't feel like it. There are no overnight fixes. Consistency is the key. We hear this over and over and over again in the New Testament. It is a process of partnering with God. And this, really, if you're watching this, you're like, well, wait a minute. I feel like this is just a big loop then, because then to stay the course, I'm going to need to go touch base with those right people again who are like, whoa, I think you're drifting a little bit. And then I'm going to have to be honest. And then they're going to be like, well, hey, let's maybe dial it in a little bit because now you've grown in this area, but maybe let's shift focus and maybe like address this other little thing, right? And you're going to have to do that. And then you're going to have to stay the course there. And then you're going to have to check back in with them, right? And people that are consistently growing and have a healthy thing that you wish you had, this is what they're doing. And it seems so basic, so simple, that we mistake it for being easy. It's not easy. But I'll tell you, the people that I've spent time with who I'm like, man, they have such an incredible marriage. That's what I want things to feel like when I'm celebrating my 50th year anniversary. That's what I want it to be like. And It's this process over and over and over again. People that like have been able to maintain their physical health and have energy and stamina to actually spend time and invest in their grandkids. It's just this process over. And people that have grown a business or been able to do something without like losing their soul and betraying their family in the process. It's this process over. And people that have had spiritual growth in their life, that have been able to see the fruit of the Spirit begin to fully bloom in their life. They're just working this process over and over and over and over again. And that's what God wants for you. God does not want you to get to the end of your life or even to the middle of your life or even the first quarter of your life and look back and say, you know what I regret? I regret all the things that I did not even attempt, that I didn't even try. And I also regret going and attacking all of these things and filling my time with stuff that does not matter. This is what sloth tricks us into doing. You want your life to be fulfilled. And it looks like pursuing righteousness. Waking up to what you're in denial of. And deciding that you're going to submit that to God. And you're going to pursue Him step by step by step. Day after day. After day, not getting bored with the monotony, because what is on the other side of it matters. And that's what I want to pray into your life today. Would you bow your heads with me across this room? Before I pray for all of us, I want to pray for a few of you specifically. Maybe you were in a place where you're like, man, I love that idea of like the power of the creator of the universe, like through Jesus invading my life and giving me the ability to do and become all that I want to be and do, all that He has made me to be and do. But I gotta be honest, I don't know that I've ever taken that step to really, truly place Christ, to place God, to place Jesus at the center of my life. We call that saying yes to Jesus. And if you're ready to take that step today, I wanna pray with you that today would be the beginning of a transformative experience for you to move from vice to virtue. And if that's you, would you just do something brave? And as no one's looking around, just slip your hand in the air so I can pray for you specifically today, that God would transform you with His power, His grace, His forgiveness. Awesome. Awesome. God, I know You see every hand, You see every heart in this room. And God, I pray that Your peace and Your love and Your compassion and Your forgiveness, and God, even the part of You that challenges us to not settle, I pray that these things would rise up within us. And God, we would have a sense that You love us just as we are, and You also love us too much just to leave us where we are. You want to take us somewhere. You want us to step into everything that You have made us to be, to live life to the full, to do work that matters, to have relationships that matter, to make a difference in our world and community. And God, I pray that as we hand over the keys to our life, our heart to You, God, that You would begin to take us where You want us to go, where we are meant to go. God, that You would uproot the vice of sloth in us. God, that we wouldn't be inactive, that we wouldn't be overactive towards the wrong things, but God, that we would pursue righteousness as You define it. And God, be made whole. It's in Your name we pray, Jesus. Amen.
Thanks again for listening to this week's message from South Hills Church in Corona, California. We hope that you will continue to connect with us here online. We would love to hear your story, feel your questions, and learn how this ministry has changed your life. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by searching South Hills Corona.